Accession number 27347, Reel 27.
Stanley Brand, Reel 27. You were telling me earlier of a story about a psychiatrist who was assigned to your squadron.
Yes, just after... in the early months of 1945, they were cutting down on the number of MacShep trips because the threat to convoys was diminishing. So I was given some leave then, knowing that I was going back for another run at least. And apparently the Admiralty was getting very worried that the morale of 836 Squadron was rock bottom. So they decided to send a psychiatrist there up to the squadron to sound out just how big the problem was and how difficult it would be to overcome it. We got wind of this, and this unassuming RN officer with a red band in between his two gold ones, obviously a medical man, didn't seem to have any appointment. He just arrived in the squadron and joined in with everything we did. So we realised that he was a psychiatrist, or as we dubbed him, the trick cyclist. So we decided to give him the runaround, and we did all sorts of stupid things. Like one night after he'd gone to bed, we filched one of the felt pads from under the squadron secretary's typewriter with a bottle of ink, and we soaked the pad in ink. We put it in a food tray that we got from the galley, and we held one of our members while he took his shoes off, got his feet well inked in the off the pad, and then we lifted him, carried him to the wall, where he went up the wall with his inked footprint across the ceiling to the halfway point when we dropped him. So that next morning the trick cyclist came and saw the footprints up the wall across the ceiling and then blank, and he wanted to know what it was all about. And we said that one of our members had come to the conclusion that he was Jesus Christ and could walk on water, so he was challenged to walk across the ceiling. And he was halfway across the ceiling when realization overtook him, and then his powers failed and he just fell to the ground. He's in sick bay if you want to interview him. That sort of story. We did silly things like at the meal, at a sign, we'd all put down our knives and forks at once with a clatter. And when he was puzzled as to why this was, we said, well, we've all had enough. We've had enough. We've had enough. We've had enough. And we took that poor chap for a cycle ride. I'm trying to think of other ones that we did. We did a formation on government bicycles. We did a formation ride around the quarterdeck, the main drill square, and ended up by all crashing into each other and falling on the ground. And we said, oh well, we knew there was a minefield there and we should have avoided it, but I don't know, Jerry's wonderful, the way he's got the sensitivity of these minds. We all collapsed. That sort of thing. He didn't know just how serious we were and how much was due to operational stress.
I think something else we mentioned earlier as well that we've not put on the tape was you mentioned that you were accidentally fired on by the Americans at some stage.
Yes. Coming back to the convoy in fog, which had come down whilst I was away on the Newfoundland banks. Now, coming back to the convoy, I used to throttle back and adopt the landing position with the tail down and hanging on my prop with a good bit of engine so that I could manoeuvre quickly if I came across something in the fog. So, of course, I was at my slowest. I was flying along at about 63, 64 miles an hour, which gave everybody warning of me coming and plenty of time. Now, what I hadn't realised was that with the convoy was an American Coast Guard cutter, which was on loan to the Canadians for East Coast convoys. And I suppose most of these men had never seen the sea before. They're probably from the Midwest. And they were trigger-happy people who'd been brought up in the Western cinema cult that the man who draws first and fires first is the goody, and the man who drops dead is the baddie. They opened up on me coming back to the convoy. An open cockpit, single engine, biplane, and they thought I'd come from Germany fully armed to sink the convoy and that their lives were in peril. Therefore, they must open up on me and try and get me first. Fortunately, the fog was so thick that I came out of the fog and was back into fog when all they could do was open up everything, whether they were aiming properly or not. It was quite frightening because they all aimed off too much, so it went in front of me with tracer. I could see it, which was rather frightening. But I was into fog again, fortunately, before the... I didn't get a single hit. That was just before Christmas. No, it was... Sorry, it was just after New Year. In 1945, New Year 1945, they threw everything at me. So I landed on, quite annoyed. And, of course, all the crew were in full support of me. We got the galley to rustle up all the gash that they could. Peas, turkey bones, bits of pork rind, pork and beans, anything that they could, anything, all the leftovers, into a dustbin. And we put the dustbin in the back cockpit, and Johnny and Bill were ready and able to tip it out at the appropriate moment. So we went over to this ship and we flew low over it. As I did it as slowly as I could, and we poured out the contents of the dustbin from stern to bow. Now, it was equipped with Hedgehog, which was a battery of mortars up in the bow, which used to fire mortar projectiles ahead of their ship in a pattern. Now, because it was in the bow, it took all the heavy seas, so it was always well greased. I bet it took them weeks to get rid of the peas and the mashed potatoes. We got the bridge and hedgehog. And in addition, we went round again and dropped toilet rolls, which we got entangled in their aerial. They went... sorry, we were inward bound, not outward bound. I'm trying to place the date and the time. We were inward bound because that ship went into Halifax Harbour with toilet rolls flying from its aerial. They couldn't drop the aerial to take the toilet rolls off because they needed to be in touch with the basin, the convoy for the entrance into the harbour. So everybody was asking them what was the meaning of the toilet rolls. So I hope they had to admit that they'd fired on us. But the fact that they didn't clobber us... but the officer in charge of firing... to think that an open cockpit biplane could be of German origin and a menace to them, it's unthinkable. It's just an illustration of the American attitude towards threat, and it's got to be the other guy, not themselves, that suffers.
Obviously, you flew that last mission on May the 6th.
Yeah.
What happened next? Where did you... Were you heading back to the UK at that time?
We were coming round the south of Ireland, heading back into the UK. We got a signal to say that we would be craned off in the Clyde. We weren't to fly off. So everybody started celebrating. My observer, my air gun and myself all had far more to drink than we should have. Remember that John Haig Golden Liqueur Scotch whiskey was £5 a bottle and Gordon Gin was 4 and threepence or something. Yes, we all drank more than we should, and there were bodies all over the place. People, I think there were 2 people asleep in my bunk because we'd had a bit of a party in my cabin and some had passed out. We just moved on to another party. And then the air staff officer came down in a panic saying, we've just had a signal to fly off to Maydown instead, cancel the craning off in the Clyde, fly off to Maydown. That was in the early hours of May the 8th, VE Day. Yes, fly off to Maydown. Well, we tied Bill down in the back seat. Johnny accepted that he'd go ashore with the rest, and another observer took his place in the back seat. We decided that I would fly it off, and I decided of my own accord that the boys had been so good to me that I'd give them a display of aerobatics and flying, just for them to keep in their mind for perpetuity. So I took off and started to fool around doing dives on the ship. I flew below deck level down one side of the ship with the crowd in the nets looking down on me, and then to make things even, I flew around the bow and came back down the other side for them to have their turn. And then I thought I'd frighten the people on deck, so I went up to about 500 feet and did a peel off and dive and came down along the deck, and they all cleared into the nets and I bounced my wheels along the deck. Eventually I decided to frighten the people on the bridge. So I went up to about 1,000 feet and did a peel-off dive and came down, and I carried the ship's aerial away in my port wing. It cut about 1 foot into the leading edge of the wing, and I had about 100 yards of wire trailing behind me. And I decided that if I did any more beat-ups, I might decapitate somebody with the trailing wire. So I went up to 1,000 feet and just waggled my wings and said goodbye. And I headed off for Maydown. I had to go across the Irish Sea, which meant going out of sight of land because visibility wasn't too good. And there was nobody fit to navigate for me, but I knew if I pointed generally in the direction, I'd get there. And then I flew up the coast, then along the Antrim coast, and finally, coming past Portrush, I couldn't resist the temptation to beat up the Seabank Hotel, in spite of the wire trailing. So I went down to the water's edge and bounced my wheels along the sand, and then just did another fly past and waggled my wings and waved and waved and waved. And they came to the door of the Seabank and waved a tablecloth. So they knew it was me. Then I flew on down Loch... down the loch on which Maydown and Londonderry are based. That name's second nature to me, but it shows the state of my mind. I can't remember it. And I flew up the loch, and in Londonderry there were these black U-boats tied up alongside that come in and surrendered. They must have been pretty close to get there within the 48 hours from the signal. They must have been all round the coast. Black menace. I was very glad to see them tied up. Anyway, I landed at Maydown. There was nobody. I flew past the control tower and fired off a green Veery light from my Veery cartridge, Veery gun. I got no response, so I just went in and landed. The usual thing was for the people in the control tower to report to customs and excise when people came in from sea, but there was nobody there. I had bottles of whiskey, bottles of gin, stowed in the wing, where my ground crew cut the canvas back, stowed the drinks, re-canvassed it, re-doped it, and it was safe there until after the customs people had been. So I was quite happy to go in and land, but there was nobody about. So I started firing off Veery cartridges, three star greens and three star reds, and eventually somebody got hold of the duty officer, who came around in his utilitarian little truck, and we unloaded all our loot and everything into his utilitarian. And he took us over to the wardroom, where nearly everybody was drunk. Nobody considered themselves to be on duty. So we did find a wren who was used to people coming in from sea at short notice, with no notice, and she allocated us a Nissen hut and beds. So off we went, and we stowed away our loot and went back to the wardroom. The customs and excise bloke came out about 2 days later, because being VE Day, I think they'd had a bit of a holiday too. He came out too late for anything, of course, and he had a young trainee with him who was very smart and obviously thought, these people are all in cahoots, I'm going to clear them up once and for all. He was very smart. He thought that he had us. We just produced, I think, a half bottle of whiskey and one or two of the cans of beer that nobody could drink. They were cone top ones, like the old Meppo metal polish cans. The days of the flat top can hadn't arrived in those days. They were cone topped cans with a crown cork on, and the stuff was absolutely undrinkable because they hadn't got the lining right in those days for beer. And these had been going backwards and forwards across the Atlantic. Nobody had drank them. But we had some for giving away to the customs. So we gave them the beer and told them that was all we had, but because we hadn't been able, we hadn't the money to go shopping in Canada. Great sympathy, and we brought them Guinness and more Guinness and still more Guinness, and eventually they'd had enough, decided that we had nothing to declare. And we gave them a lift back to Londonderry in the camp van, which had it had 3/4 hour runs into Londonderry, and it took them in. And the last I remember was seeing this young customs officer with his head on the shoulder, the most unattractive wren I knew, and he'd been making advances apparently, but he eventually went to sleep with his head on his shoulder. That's the last I ever saw of him. So everybody was in a carnival spirit for days. Nobody wanted to make any decisions because they didn't know what the Admiralty instructions would be, like my instructions, which were fly off, then don't fly off, and then do fly off. Contradictory. Nobody wanted to make any decisions that might be held against them in the after-war years when they were looking for promotion. That is, none of the regulars. All the volunteer reserve just wanted to get out as soon as they could.
Was there a potential at that point of time, though, of you going to the Far East?
Very definitely. I knew that I would be retrained. I didn't know whether on fighters or other aircraft. I thought maybe I'd be appointed to an Avenger squadron. But my first job was to go around all the airfields, all the Fleet Air Arm airfields in the UK, collecting swordfish and taking them to Barton Airport, just outside Manchester, where they were destroying them. I thought at first that they'd be salvaging, but they weren't. All they were doing was putting paraffin on them, setting them on fire in one corner of the airfield. And then they were crushing all the steelwork, copperware, wire, platinum points, everything. They just crushed it into a bale and stuck it into a trench that they dug and then covered them over. So I decided that I was going to keep the joystick and one of the roundels from the aircraft that I flew. So I'd taken my spanners and so on, and when I parked my Swordfish, good old faithful, I took the control column out and I cut out this roundel from the fuselage. I was going to make a lampshade out of the fabric and a pedestal lamp out of the joystick. And as I was going out of the gate, a penguin stopped me. Penguin was our name for a young RAF officer without wings. He stopped me at the gate and threatened me with court-martial, threatened to arrest me there and then for theft. He said, of all people, I said, look, I've flown this aircraft on the Atlantic. Surely I'm entitled to something now. The war's over. What are you going to do with it? You're going to bury it. It didn't matter. I think I'd been seen by a senior officer who didn't want to do the dirty work himself, and he'd told this duty officer to accost me and apprehend me. He hadn't any choice in the matter, I realise now. He just had to make a scapegoat out of me. So in the end, he agreed to confiscate the proceeds of my robbery, and he let me go. But I was furious about that. It's another thing I can never forgive the RAF for.
How did you feel seeing all those Swordfishes going up in flames on the airfield?
At the time, I just felt, well, they've served their purpose. But afterwards, I got this horrible feeling of vandalism. I'd been a vandal to do it. And I could have had one of them for £100. But I hadn't £100 in those. I was actually offered a tiger moth for £50, officially. But I hadn't the £50. I couldn't have the tiger moth. I felt great sorrow at letting this happen, especially seeing the aftermath of burning Swordfish with paraffin. Because their backs would break and the wings would droop. Yes, it was horrible. I felt it was a sort of Viking ship funeral. I was glad I wasn't in it. And I was appointed to 766 Squadron, which was a conversion onto Fireflies. So I realised that my course was then to go out to the Far East on monoplane, single engine, two-seater night fighters. I was going to be a night fighter. I always had very easily dilated pupils. I was always good on night vision. I could see in conditions that lots of people couldn't, and it was just that my eyeballs would dilate. I realise now that you can get that effect from taking drugs, but I certainly wasn't on drugs, and I still despise anybody who takes to drugs. But I had this ability, and it was ideal for night fighter.
Where did you do the conversion course with the squadron?
I was sent down to Leon Solent, where I did my first introduction to Fireflies, and did quite a bit of flying down there. And then I came back up to Inskip, which now was a conversion onto Fireflies, where we could do bombing, machine gunning, and operational training unit.